Ally McBeal invents internet memes. The MTV Video Music Awards spans decades. And Alf loves a good mystery. Ha! This week on 30-2010. 2010. Welcome everyone, oh my lord, to another fun-filled episode of 30-2010, the internet's pop culture window into the past. We're going to look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago, 1987, 1997, and 2007, spanning the week of September 8th through the 14th. We look at pop culture, a little bit of news, music releases, what's at the top of the charts, all that good stuff. Hi, I'm Chris Antista.
I'm Dave. I'm telling expert Rudden. That's kind of obscure, but you'll get it later.
Okay, promise.
Korean dragon Diana Goodman.
Let it be known, Diana's the only person in literally a decade to reference D-Wars. There's a lot of fun stuff to talk about this week. A bunch of obscurities lost to time. Stay tuned. We're going to find something that you're guaranteed to like. Ooh, stay tuned.
Game fans, want to get the latest tips and tricks to unlock advanced boards in your favorite games? Well, you won't hear any of that on Vidigame Apocalypse, but you will hear a bunch of nerds talking about their favorite moments in video games. For example,
I was really hoping Pocket Card Jockey could be a surprisingly good game, and it is. Oh, it really, really is. Did you want to play a game that is a very loving tribute to the sport of horse racing?
No.
That's also sport a of game of solitaire.
No.
It's pretty much next Rusty Slugger. And it's really good. $7 on the eShop for your 3DS, boys.
What? I got to pay up front for a Nintendo download?
Well, get the demo. It's good. It's good.
Also, I can't tell people I'm playing Pocket Card Jockey without them thinking like, oh, so you're masturbating.
Yeah, Dave, everybody knows you work out of your house primarily. Mm-hmm. Everyone assumes you're masturbating all the time. Yeah. Until you talk to them, you're masturbating. Your friends think
it took
that.
Dave 15 minutes to answer this hangout question, maybe.
Look, I do it tantric style, so it's got a...
Uncharted 4!
Uncharted 4. That's Vidigame Apocalypse every Friday on the Laser Time Network. To see more, go to VidigameApocalypse.com. Just take me by the hand, my friend. I'll give you the best of me.
We're the Archies in a brand new show. Gonna take it through. But as we always do, we kick off 30-2010 with a look at 1987. And once again, this week is September 8th through the 14th. And we start out with a little bit of news. The House passes an apology to interned Japanese Americans. $1.2 billion in restitution.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, back during World War II, we got a little paranoid because there were people who lived on the West Coast mostly who looked an awful lot like people we were fighting. And
this can never happen again.
Yeah, we kind of put them all in a bunch of camps. Mm-hmm. And, oh, it was for their protection, except all the guard towers pointed at them. And we thought all those little kids maybe were subversive elements. To be fair, we did actually intern some Germans, mm-hmm. but not like third generation German Americans like we did with the Japanese.
Yeah, because in this, our history classes did not cover this. That's for sure.
Because it's a shameful thing about America and we don't want to deal with.
And when I got to California, California was way more ready to embrace that, I think, especially because they had a lot of camps here. And there's still survivors living all over.
Freaking George Takei.
Yeah.
We locked up Sulu. We locked up Sulu when he was a little baby because I guess we can't trust those nice
Japanese farmers. When he's going to get a zero plane and start flying it over America.
Yeah. We better clear out
the
land.
I've got a nuke here, you know.
Watch
out. I'm ready.
We got to clear out that land where Disneyland is now and huge chunks of Orange County in the valley.
Are you kidding?
A lot of Southern California, there were farms owned by Japanese folks. There's a big farmland thing. And yeah, a lot of people lost their homes and lost their farms and never got them back. And
eesh.
That was one of the holdouts to build for when Disneyland wanted to expand into California Adventure, mm-hmm. was this like one tiny, tiny mini farm that was owned by this Japanese-American family that they were like, we barely got this back after the war, man. We're not giving it to you, fucking Disney. And they're like, here's $80 billion per square foot. And they're like, no. It took them a long time to finally get that last chunk of Anaheim.
We went to Congress and rewrote Walt's eminent domain law.
Yeah, for just about.
A magical eminent domain. But
so,
that is,
yes,
that's awesome.
Did as finally a, apologize.
As a giant Disneyland fan, yeah. Laser Time did a Disneyland episode that, like, that just in that in my mind is unrecognizable. Yeah. Disneyland did build itself in the middle of nowhere, but everything popped up around it.
Oh yeah,
like it, oh man. And but at least that's the last shameful event in American history.
Yep, that was the last time we screwed about. Up.
And what's this on September 13th? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I had never heard about this. Mm-hmm. Goiânia incident in Brazil, where a bunch of thieves broke into an abandoned hospital, which had not been properly cleared out, and stole a bunch of equipment to sell for scrap metal, but some of it was radiological equipment.
Oh, my God.
And so they got radiation poisoning. It turned out 250 people were found to be exposed in the end.
Oh,
four of them
God.
Died. And when they tried to bury them, there 2,000 people rioted because they did not want the cemetery.
People in the ground.
They did not want radioactive cemetery zombies.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's insane. Look, if you're going to fence something, right. Don't fence anything that requires
but,
a hazmat
yeah,
suit.
250 people were exposed, but only four died. So that means we have 246 super mutated.
Oh, exactly.
New superheroes from Russia.
Superpowered Brazilians.
Brazil.
Yeah. But Jesus.
That's why their soccer teams are so good.
Now this-
oh, my God.
Now, this is all depressing news, and I can't promise you it gets any better, because the movies of 1987... Have the distinction here of being like almost none of these I've ever heard of or seen.
No, 97's going to be that's going to be a great one. We have a ton of movies to talk about there. Here, they're all sort of...
I think that for 87 and a little bit of 97, big studios are kind of holding back because it's, I think, right before Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't want to be putting out movies at least for
a
while. That was the rule.
The same
I
way
think.
Summer television takes... We don't want to compete with anyone's vacation.
I mean,
Labor Day does the same
thing. In 2017,
thing.
We have like... We've just hit some of like the lowest performing weeks in years.
I do believe this around this week it was the lowest box office performance in 16 years, and there was a Terminator 2 movie released. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, it's like, what, 25 years later?
I know, but it's still one of the best movies of all time.
I actually don't want to see that in 3D, thank you.
Which can't be said for Will Wheaton's 2D. The Curse, also starring Claude Akins. The Man with a Fantastic Buck from Master Ninja. I've never seen this. When a meteorite lands near his family farm during the storm in Tennessee, the son of a struggling farmer believes it's connected to a strange plague-like events afflicting the crops.
This is Will Wheaton in his awkward phase in between.
It's before Next Gen.
Post Stand By Me. Pre-Nexion. He's still looking for his next big gig.
And we also have Dark Eyes. Huh?
With Marcello Mastroianni. I only know this because he's going to get an Oscar nomination off of this, but I honestly don't know. I don't care. It's not even in my top 10 Mastroianni films. So.
Even the names of most of these movies are boring to me. A Prayer for the Dying with Mickey Rourke.
But the cast is amazing.
Liam Neeson and Bob Hoskins.
It's an IRA drama.
Wow,
so
really?
That's always fun.
We should have had
I wish those like were three of my uncles. Like, Michael Mickey, my Uncle Liam, my Uncle Bob.
You would never, ever be able to stock a bar.
Yeah. any bully that attacked me, man, they would just get destroyed by those three.
Oh, my God.
And also Deadline, which is, I couldn't find it until I looked up, a.k.a. Witness in the War Zone.
Right. Christopher Walken is a reporter during the Lebanese Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I got a scoop.
I did look up some clips from it, of course.
Don't kill those guys.
Oh, this is an injustice to Travis.
I can't believe I'm a witness in the war zone.
But that's the thing. It's, you have not seen Walken act serious in so long, because he's only used comedically. Mm-hmm. Which I only found funny because he's screaming his heart out in this movie, watching people get shot and getting punched in the chest. But what's funny to me is that, like, he's one of those actors who has seemingly refused to ever get a different haircut. No, I want the perfect Max Headroom, Dwayne Wayne flat top forever. And he still has it now, and he has it in this film.
Yeah. Except Catch Me If You Can. Right in the middle of Walken as a joke, he does an amazing serious performance.
He does that occasionally. He still does. I don't want to give him any shit, but on a high profile level, he's a comedic actor.
Oh yeah, we just had Balls of Fury like last week, 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
Ping Pong.
And here's the most interesting title: Sammy and Rosie Get Laid, a movie I've never heard of.
Hey, they're both gonna get laid.
They're both gonna get laid.
Can you do that in a British accent?
Oh, they're both going to get laid, mate.
Downtown Shropshire. Never heard of this.
I'm kind of curious to see it because it is author Hanif Qureshi and director Stephen Frears teaming up after My Beautiful Laundrette, which is better known. If you want to see really young Daniel Day-Lewis make out with a Pakistani dude, there you go, baby.
Man, I wonder how method he got for that.
It's about, I'm pretty sure they're Pakistani, Indian or Pakistani family, and they're, you know, immigrant parents and their kids and the struggles between modern life and traditional family. A title though. It's so weird.
Yeah, Sam and Rosie get laid. I just read about the description was like Sam and Rosie are getting a ton of stanky on their hang down, but not from one another. Like just fucking everybody else. And then the description goes on to say, until Sammy's dad visits, like, all right, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this. But this is the one I think most of our viewers would, or most of our listeners would be familiar with.
I love this trailer.
This town is dead until after dark. Welcome to Salem's Lot. Stephen King brought them to life.
Vampires.
Now.
What are you doing here?
They rise from their graves again.
Dad! Give me my son back!
Vampires!
As only Stephen King could create them. A Return to Salem's Lot, directed by Larry Cohen.
Directed by Larry Cohen of The Stuff, writer of Maniac Cop. But this ties into a lot of current events. This is a Return to Salem's Lot.
Vampires.
Yeah,
because like my son.
This is like vampires as zombies, which is not an uncool premise. Mm-hmm. Zombies who are smart. Pretty decent. Mm-hmm. But it's based on a tying into current events. It's yet another theatrical sequel or remake to a Stephen King TV miniseries. We're about to see that with It as of right now. And also tying into semi-current events and sad news, it's a follow-up of Salem's Lot, the monumental television miniseries directed by Toby Hooper, who we just lost. And again, it's about to be Halloween. I cannot recommend most of his horror work enough. It is so cool. A lot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I love it. It's the most... Why am I talking about this? But see Invaders from Mars and Life Force 2. That's really fun. But I haven't seen Return from Salem's Lot in a long time. I remember I rented it by accident trying to get the original.
Oh.
And it was in the wrong case. I should have known. Look for the three VHSs rubber banded together. But yeah, Return to Salem's Lot out this week. And I think this is kind of the end for that series.
I'm sure there's Salem's Lot, the reawakening.
I should not say that. Children of the Corn got 6 movies, so why not?
I always
mix
those
two
up for some reason.
It's totally possible. Yeah. Pet Cemetery, like just shit that comes, a graveyard that comes to life.
When they mowed down all the corn, did they replace it with Salem's Lot?
The corn isn't as important to the children. As important to the children. What's that kid's name? Malachi? Well, let's move out of the movies because we have a lot of TV stuff.
Yeah, a lot of just cool, neat little things. I don't know if we're going to do a deep dive on any of this.
TV's back.
We're starting a lot more with Saturday morning stuff. There's going to be some season premieres.
Yeah.
And in 87, there's a lot more season premieres than 97 and 07 because, you know, sometime in the last 2 decades, we've pushed back when we start our stuff. Mostly due to the World Series, I think. But, like, yeah, for the other decades, you'll see it at the end of the month. But for 87, we're getting a lot of stuff right here at the beginning of the month. And something that ties everything together is the TV special Alf Loves a Mystery, which aired on NBC was a staple of the 80s for me, which was like right before Saturday morning cartoons hit, you get a primetime special that collected all of them together.
There's one with Hulk Hogan and one with Richard Pryor.
They were always great, and this one is no exception. So the description that I got from Wikipedia is that Alf uses a computer to create a story where Brian, which was the boy he lived with, where Brian is a gumshoe who's going to explore an old mansion to find a hidden treasure. Clues about the new cartoons were given by the stars of NBC's Saturday morning and primetime lineups.
Is like a promo special for the Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah,
but this should be more watchable, but it sucks. I hate this.
But yeah, you want to hear the stars that
the
are
list
here.
Of stars. You can see there's one show they're pushing a little heavier than others.
Alf Loves a Mystery, starring in alphabetical order, Alf. From Our House, Shannon Doherty. From St. Elsewhere, Stephen Burt. From Alf, Benji Gregory. From 227, Jack A.
Yeah.
From Valerie's Family, Danny Fonsi. From Bags to Riches, Douglas Seal. From the Golden Girls, Betty White. Mary Wicks. From Rags to Riches, Heidi Ziegler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm telling you, Sid, my memoirs are going to sell a million.
Jesus. This is this is totally unwatchable.
It is garbage.
I tried. I'm a big, dumb, like, semi-ironic Al fan.
But it has one of my favorite clips I think I've ever found for this show.
Oh, yeah?
Which is one of the guests, dude, Betty White.
So there are so many dead people in that cast list, and none of them are Betty White. It's insane.
Shannon Doherty's still with us.
Still with us.
Don't tell me the kid from Hogan's Family died. But here is Betty White's section of the show, which totally delivered. When I saw her there, I'm like, you better be doing something great, Betty White. And here she is doing an intro to a cartoon. She's looking in a crystal ball.
Oh, fudge. The reception's on the blink again. All I get is a hairy guy with a big nose and an attitude problem. Hey.
Hairy little guy, huh? This character just wrote herself out of this mystery. We're moving on. Okay, gummy bears, hit it.
Wow.
That's it?
Betty White
calling to Alf, who calls to gummy bears. That
Dude,
is the greatest
Betty
transition.
White now throwing to gummy bears is the Chris Antista trifecta. That's pretty great.
But yeah, so some of the Saturday morning cartoons that debuted this week. See, we got September 12th, the My Pet Monster premiered.
This is really important to me. We touched on it last year, but we also did a full commentary on our YouTube channel.
Last year was when the
live action version.
And the toy became big.
But that's I didn't realize how independent AmToy was. Mm-hmm. For me, as a little boy in 1987, there was almost nothing bigger than My Pet Monster. Mm-hmm. I just bought one on eBay because my parents wouldn't get me one. They were very expensive, big stuffed animals with sharp teeth and chains. Blue. I loved it. I wanted to know more about it. I wanted more of the backstory. But the toy manufacturer didn't know any, and no one was forcing them. So they made a live action straight to video movie that's set in the real world where a little kid turns into the monster. Mm-hmm. And then they use some of the same people from that movie to make an animated series that's just completely different. The monster is a monster all the time. Mm-hmm. And the theme song, which I thought I loved, but turns out is the worst thing ever. Every time I see My Pet Monster, I sing this video.
My Pet Monster, on him I can depend. My Pet Monster, a monster of a friend. He's big and blue and scary, but a friendly monster too. My Pet Monster, Pet Monster, I love you.
A lot of pledging your love to things in the
end.
Because it starts out with a huge Addams Family misdirect.
Yeah.
And then switches into just baby Calliope music.
It's like the shit, it realized 5 seconds into, oh shit, we're infringing. Change course. Something completely different.
And then also, Jesus Christ, this is all real bad.
The new Archies.
The new Archies.
Which, the name doesn't do it enough justice. This is the Flintstones kids, but for Archies. So yeah, Archie, Betty, Veronica, Jughead, Reggie, instead of being high schoolers, they're junior high schoolers.
Yeah.
So it's a couple years earlier. They all just look a little bit different.
So it's the same bullshit, but nobody can drive. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, no one can throw anybody out of a car and say, stay out of Riverdale. Yeah. That's a Simpsons reference.
And you can no longer say you're a Veronica or Betty kind of guy when they're 12 years old.
Jesus Christ. And that's... God, there was already a new Archies.
Yes.
Because they're the ones who did the sugar...
Right. That was in the 60s, wasn't it?
I know, but there's already a show called The New Archies.
We need Archies rebooted for the 80s.
This is somehow even worse.
Yeah, Popeye and Son.
Popeye and Son. There's not a clip worth playing. It's a one season disgusting phenomenon.
Which, I thought Popeye already had kids. Didn't he have Popeye and Poopy and Pee-Pee?
Poopy, Popeye, Peepy, and Poopy are his nephews. And they're introduced.
Poopy has a really bad case of conjunctivitis.
This is back when, they didn't want to marry cartoon characters, so they always gave them nephews instead of children. But this is sort of fucked up. It's sort of like if Donald Duck was given a wife. At this point, you would. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, but everyone knew Olive Oil at least. So,
yeah, I forget exactly how that worked. But the big takeaway is it's made in 87, where I think this is where children's cartoons at the forefront of our children watching too
and
many.
They got to reboot
images.
All these cartoons in a certain way, and this is like, hey, let's give Popeye a kid. Let's make Archie's younger.
Yeah, and his kid. His kid hates spinach. He doesn't like spinach,
but
he still has the powers. Yeah. But they don't hit anyone, which wouldn't be a big deal because I barely remember this. But yeah, the Popeye cartoons. Yeah, I think they may not be appropriate for children now. I love them, but they're still airing on television. Yeah. So when you have this expectation as a little kid, and Popeye doesn't do anything. Why are even Bluto friends? This sucks. He cares more about being a good father.
Yeah. Also, the original voice actor for Popeye. This is the first time he didn't play Popeye.
Because he
died.
How did I get that information?
And Maurice LaMarche was the new Popeye, which is kind of weird. Because I'm just
Well,
I'm just picturing. Didn't Maurice LaMarche play like he was the brain, right?
Yes.
That's just so totally different from what I expect from Popeye.
Oh, he's all over the place. He's all over Rick and Morty now.
Really?
Yeah. He's a legendary voice actor.
Let's go. There's one more cartoon to talk about, but it was a it wasn't a Saturday morning cartoon. Mm. It was one of those Monday to Friday cartoons on a monkey fighting plane. September 14th, 1987, Dino Saucers debuted, and it has one of my favorite theme songs.
Oh, I don't instantly remember it.
We used to be four ordinary teenagers until one day we met some new friends out of town.
Put your shades down.
They were called Dinosaucers.
Oh my god!
My friends and I became the secret scouts, allies to these dinosaurs from outer space, and joined in their battles against Genghis Rex and the evil Tyrannos.
All right, wonderful.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago, we had another fighting dinosaur show.
That was Extreme Dinosaurs.
Extreme Dinosaurs. Now we got this Captain Planet-looking fighting dinosaur show.
Well, the difference is that the Extreme Dinosaurs, that was in 1997 when it was too late.
Oh, that's right.
This is 1987, when the world is not ready for dinosaurs. Yeah. I'm going to say that because that show... To quote Stefan, it has everything.
It has everything.
Dinosaurs, rings.
Kids with planet rings.
Space.
One season cancellation.
Yeah, it was done by December. It's so nuts.
I was a kid so into dinosaurs and just sort of watched these shows get canceled over and over again. But, you know, they're technically not dinosaurs because they're just He-Man action figures with armor on
they're six feet tall. They're dinosaurs from space. That makes them better than regular dinosaurs.
You would think on paper it works. In execution, it's very cynical.
They kind of look like Thundercats. Dinosaurs.
So moving on to a Saturday morning live-action game show, which I have weirdly a lot of knowledge about because it aired on Family Channel for a few months, is the game show I'm Telling. Which
never heard of this.
It's a weird one. So it's basically the premise of the Newlywed Game, but with siblings. That already kind of sounds weird, right?
Where's the silliest place you like to make whoopee cushion?
So it's like, do you know your sibling? And it's usually brother and sister, but sometimes they would do like a Brother's Day or a Sister's Day, or they would do like, there's a couple celebrity episodes.
Got to cover every demo.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they're all white kids.
Yeah, they are all, usually. But on top of all this, that it's already a creepy premise. The host, he is so awkward, and he, like, if you wanted me to draw a pedophile, it would be this guy. So there'll be clips on the page for this. But
is he just sweaty and drooling the whole time?
Yeah, so, well, I'm going to wade you guys in.
Please, please.
So this clip is a little bit more acceptable. This is a future dead celebrity, but he's not on the celebrity episode. This is just him doing the show years before he got famous. So let's see if, I mean, you guys can recognize him, but let's see if the audience can.
How about you? What do you need help with, or what do you need more of than your sister? Is it food, help with your homework, or sleep?
My mom's always talking about how I always need help.
Uh-huh.
On the homework. And my sister does it. And she always makes a big issue out of it because my sister's younger than me. So it's, I would say, help with my homework.
Help with your homework. Ashley said...
Wow, his cadence is still kind of the same. This little kid's name is Paul.
Yeah.
And you will eventually know him as Paul Walker.
The show's about family.
Yeah.
Live my life a quarter sister at a time. But, man.
Next to his sister Ashley, who body doubled for him.
So you only heard the host there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll see him this time, but here is a really creepy question that should not be asked on this show.
He seems like a graduate of the Jimmy Fallon, Steve Brule School of Broadcasting. Yeah. So, I don't know.
In your opinion, does your sister look better in a one-piece bathing suit or in a bikini?
One-piece bathing suit.
You're right, kid.
One-piece bathing suit.
One-piece bathing suit. Why?
Because she looks longer, not shorter.
She looks longer, not shorter. Derek, how about your sister?
I mean, if you want to go to the beginning of the clip just to see what the guy looks like, he's actually a prominent voice actor, but it's like kind of better heard and unseen.
And
like 34.
All we know for sure is they're going to tell it all today on. And here's the host of I'm Telling, Lori Fonzo!
Christ.
Oh, okay. So he, yeah, Lori Fasso yeah. was a voice actor on Snorks, Munchichis, Darkwing Duck, Transformers, and The Little Troll Prince.
I think he just parlayed that, like, look, I'm doing all these voices. I could also do a game show if you want me to, and then he's just so weird.
A little camera shy and awkward.
I swear, like, we would watch, it was weird because it would be on, like, Fox, the or Family Channel.
Family Channel.
At, like, 4 o'clock, so it would be out of school and be like, well, let's watch I'm Telling Again. It's just so weird. There's an episode, I swear, one of the girls is called, her name is Chastity, and he keeps calling her Chesty.
Jesus.
And I'm like,
Christ.
Bring the cops in. Bring the cops
Arrest
in.
Arrest this man. But also, yes. what? But we have to get out of children's,
sorry.
Children's news.
So we'll be talking more about this next week. But Courtney Cox guest stars on Family Ties as Alex Keaton's new girlfriend. Yeah. And he'd be one of the more well-known girlfriends he had on the show. Mm-hmm. And she'd end up being on 21 episodes. So, like, a pretty lengthy
nice.
Guest starring. Almost the whole season. Then there's the MTV Video Music Awards where Sledgehammer won big.
It just swept it. It just swept everything.
It sledgehammered.
Swept.
I think for a long time, it was one of the most expensive music videos ever made.
Yeah, and I think it's still like the most played music video just because they never fully took it out of rotation. And any time they do a best videos of which they used to do like 5 times a year, Sledgehammer was usually number one.
Yeah.
And they would play it over and over and over.
I'd always forget.
It's so awesome,
I'd be
and
like,
I love it.
I'd always be like, wait, Black or White was number two? What could be number one? Oh, yes.
We are supported by a Patreon. And on our recent bonus time episode, our weekly Patreon exclusive show, I talked about watching the new VMAs and how far it's got. It was the most serious affair I've ever seen compared to what I always thought was like the fun music awards.
Yeah.
Anyway, that Sledgehammer is a video I'll watch every time it's on.
Yeah.
If it comes on the radio, I'm like, I fucking hate this song.
Ah, it's fun.
I hate this song.
It's fun, but I do tend to just imagine the video. It's like, this is the dancing chicken part.
Yeah. But also one TV movie of note.
Yes, TV movies are back. Hooray. And I just love the premise of this one. The movie's called Bluffing It, and they'll describe what it's about.
Uh-oh.
Dennis Weaver.
There hasn't been anything you couldn't do when we worked on it together.
Trevor Ian Wright.
A man facing his illiteracy. Bluffing It. Next.
Oh,
man, as a little kid, you would have thought illiteracy was the biggest problem this country
had. It was
had.
In so many sitcoms.
It was. Like, how did you get to the fifth grade without learning how to read?
And
like, you have to read in front of the class.
DJ Tanner shouldn't be teaching you this. Yes. You should go to a professional.
Yes. When do we get to the part where Sylvan is invented? Anyway, that's a super American joke. Not a lot of games to note this week, but that'll change as we move further into 97-07.
As we talked about last week, we just have a bunch of September NES releases.
Yeah.
They don't tell you which week, so I just put them all at the front because we don't know.
And but music, La Bamba by Los Lobos, is back at number one. We also have new albums. Primitive Cool, Mick Jagger's second solo album, Bridge of Spies, the debut of Tipau. Always Guaranteed by Cliff Richard. Together Again by The Temptations. Big Black's final album, Songs About Fucking. Hold Your Fire by Rush. Go On, Mr. Mister's final album. And Crest of the Knave by Jethro Tull, which infamously beat out Metallica. And Injustice for All at the in the hard rock category.
Right.
At the Grammys
the first
that year.
Time they had a hard rock metal Grammy.
That's...
Metallica's Injustice for All, which is a pretty important album, and it's fucking Jethro Tull.
And it's unfair. I don't know anything about Jethro Tull, but I have
Aqualung.
Man, heavy metal fans hate them for doing
oh,
this.
Oh yeah.
For and it's not their fault. It's the Grammys. Like, yeah, Jethro Tull. That's out there. Put them in the Metallica category.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, sometimes they're kind of hard rock. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Compare Aqualung to something else.
Something else.
But,
like Steel Monkey.
Yeah, but the idea that like. Anytime there's like a niche category, the most mainstream is going to win because the most mainstream, because that's going to be like...
They want them on stage.
Well, it's not just, it's just that's the thing that people are going to like more. Mm-hmm. Like if you've got people who just like pop, you know, like just a general group of mostly white old dudes.
Hello.
And then you say, here's rap for you. Like...
Ladies and gentlemen, Debbie Harry, best rap artist.
Yeah, it's like the friendliest, most accessible rap is going to be the one that's going to win.
Kid and Play.
So,
happy rap.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Kid and Play and DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince are going to win over, you know, Eric B. and Raheem
or Africa Mbata.
Africa Mbata or KRS-One or something a little more serious. So I went through as much of Crest of the Knave by Jethro Tull as I could to find the least metal I could find.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, let's go out with Steel Monkey by Jethro Tull.
Don't go away, youth demographic.
It's the rare variant of Brass Monkey by the Beastie Boys.
Oh my god. Now compare it to Metallica.
So we'll go out with Steel Monkey by Jethro Tull. I promise millennials it'll get better in 1997 and 2007.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. This is Bob Mackey.
Chris Antista.
Henry Gilbert.
And when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons only on the Laser Time Podcast Network.
Where we occasionally talk sports.
Daryl.
When we throw people under the bus, name names like the insidious
Mr. Black.
And we're the one podcast that will never sell out to foreign interests.
Ooh, the Germans are mad at me. I'm so scared. Ooh, the Germans.
Stop. For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
Ooh, coming in with Barbie Girl by Aqua. Poor Brett couldn't be here to go to bat for one of his favorite bands.
He did send in a message.
Did he?
Come on, Barbie.
Let's
go
party. That guy has the easiest job in music. he's like a less talented Fred Schneider. But that's 1997 in music for you. Jesus Christ. Jethro Tull into Aqua. Who is this show for?
I hate this song.
Me too.
I really
Me too. It was
And it was such a huge hit.
It's so cynically catchy, and I do dislike it a great deal. But look, there's a bunch of other stuff happening in 1997. Science by Incubus comes out. Mas by Alejandro Sanz. The best-selling album of all time in Spain. Mm-hmm. It Means Everything by Save Ferris.
Save Ferris. Like
yeah, that. Behind the Eyes by Amy Grant. Vegas, the Crystal Method's debut. And Corner Shops, When I Was Born for the Seventh Time, which includes their one big-ass hit, Brim Full of Asha on the what?
45.
There you go. On 45.
We're going out with that.
Please.
The second I thought about that, I had to listen to it like 8 times, both versions.
It's,
I love that
isn't
song.
Isn't that, it's bizarre that their one-hit wonder, their biggest hit, is still bigger when it was remixed by somebody else.
Yeah.
But we'll get there, people, because Mo Money, Mo Problems is still number one. Yeah. God, I love thinking about that music video for some reason. We're in September 14th. 8th through the 14th, and we have landed in 1997, if the music didn't make that clear. But starting off with a little bit of news, on 9-11...
97.
Years before that mattered, 1997, Scotland votes for what? Devolved parliament.
Yep. Oh, man.
What does that mean?
Fuck it, we want our own parliament.
Oh, really?
We want to be a country again.
They don't want a Raichu parliament, they want a Pikachu parliament, so they got to devolve.
So they didn't have their own parliament at this point?
No.
They weren't their own country?
No. Oh. I mean, technically they're still not, but the idea that's like, well, why should we ask London for like local shit?
Yeah.
It's like, can't we have like a little, you know, something where we deal with some of our little
stuff?
What does
London know about red pubic hair dying? That's a Scottish problem.
Exactly. So, yeah, this is it's an interesting time for Britain. I would say this is the week that I went over there as an exchange student.
Mm-hmm.
Had a fun adventure with time change and had pretty much my only blackout my entire
life.
Oh,
really?
Not from drinking, but from travel, because I had to fly all the way from L.A. to London, get on the tube for an hour to get in from Heathrow to Liverpool Street Station. I'm going to shout out all specific things. So Liverpool Street Station to Norwich, that's another 2 hours to get out there. And
this Norwich is just right.
Yeah.
it's where Patron WWE comes from.
Alan Partridge reference. And then I have to like find the bus that goes like another mile and a half out of town to get to the university. Then I got to find the housing office. I get my key. Then I got to find my dorm room. And I open the dorm room and I have the thought, where does my roommate sleep? And then it goes black.
Well, really?
And I don't know what the fuck happened next, but I know I woke up on my bed in my clothes. Most of my stuff was unpacked. I don't remember doing that.
I hate to tell you, Diana, you committed a murder. You did.
It's entirely possible.
You did. You did. You blocked it out.
Killed the groundskeeper Willie.
I showed up covered in blood, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's England now. Sure.
Well, I like, but the movies get crazy interesting.
These are some good movies.
Because a bunch of stuff that I really liked at the time, including one, again, we're Patreon supported. Patreon.com/LaserTime, a weekly exclusive show, a bonus show for 302010, where we talk about what the stuff you like. But we do movie commentaries, and I think last year we did one for one of our unsung favorite horror movies called Cube.
Yay.
You're not getting out of here.
Yes, we are.
There is no way out of here.
We need to get around the trap. They're identified by prime numbers.
Figure it out.
I can't.
I'm not dying in a rat maze.
No more talking. No more guessing. You gotta save yourselves from yourselves.
Man, Cube is still a really fun film.
Cube is a solid, solid and little movie. Thank you, Canada.
One of the few movies I've seen on acid.
If you're,
don't do it, kids.
Yeah. Bad idea.
Don't do it, kids.
And if you know us and like maybe you followed us to this show, like... Mm-hmm. Most of us come from video games. Mm-hmm. This is such a video gamey movie. There's levels.
It is. It
you
essentially
have to solve puzzles.
Begins with a man alone waking up inside of a square room. Mm-hmm. There are six doors on each side, including the ceiling and the floor. Those doors lead to other different colored rooms of the same nature. Some of those rooms contain traps. Some don't. They end up like people end up meeting up, wondering how they got there, what it is, and finding out maybe there's a secret to get out of here. But of course. Man is the biggest monster of all. It has that element too, and some of the acting's a little rough, but like just a really
is it Canadian? Or
it's Canadian. Yeah.
It's still a really effective, fun premise.
Don't know what this Cube is about.
That became a
story.
I would say I don't want to say a runaway success, but like not unlike something like Boondock Saints. Yeah. This video swept through my group of friends.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about it, and they eventually made a lot of sequels, and the budget increased, but not enough, because there's some terrible CG throughout the rest of the series.
Did they make it to four, at least, so they could
Cube? I think they... That would be a shame if they didn't, but why not kickstart that?
Oh, yeah.
The End of Violence, a movie I've never heard of.
That's a Wim Wenders joint.
That's the one of the... A Wim Wender.
Yeah.
Wim Wender
Vim
joint.
Wenders.
Vim Wender, sorry. It's a W, Wenders. A German guy.
He's a German guy. Bill Pullman is... I mean, there's stuff about like a surveillance state, and then Bill Pullman's like a film producer, and then I think he thinks he's framed for murder, and he's got to run away, and Andy McDowell's there.
Gabriel Byrne is there as well.
I've never gotten really into Vim Wenders, I'm afraid.
But a movie probably the most of you have heard of came out this week, and it's pretty significant... Number one at the box office.
His birthday. This is for you. Consumer Recreation Services. Call that number.
Why?
They make your life fun.
What are you selling?
It's a game.
A game?
Whoa.
He says the title, you wins the money, James Redhorn.
they both said it. That's like a titular line back to back.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
It's a game. A game.
And this,
game?
Like, just when Little Chris is becoming a movie nerd, I would say 1994, 95, a little movie called Seven comes out. It's not the debut of David Fincher, but it's definitely his breakthrough movie. And I think this is one of the first times I was super excited. Like, I don't care who's in it. I want to see David Fincher's next movie. Seven was so goddamn good. And he makes this movie way better than it should be. Because it is a very serious movie with a Big Lebowski ending that I don't know that I should ruin. But it's Michael Douglas, a depressed billionaire. Some people have compared this to A Christmas Carol. Because he's given a gift by his brother Sean Penn to help him revitalize his life. He ends up, just waking up in a Mexico bunker with no money, no phone, and has to fight his way back. He's basically living in a game. Am I surrounded by actors? I don't know. Is this person trying to kill me? Is this gun real?
Well, he has trouble figuring out what the game is and when it starts.
When it starts and who's a part of it.
It's like, you know, he goes to the meeting and they like test to make sure, are you going to have a heart attack? Are you doing okay? Give psychological testing. How you doing? And then they're like, okay, bye. And then he's like, what the fuck was that? And then like later there's like this clown doll shows up at his house and he's like, the fuck? And wait, is there a camera in it? And like,
I think because of David Fincher,
running from there.
It's in a very effective thriller.
Yeah.
But the ending is so stupid.
With plot holes out the wazoo. It falls apart the second you start to examine
The second. So it's,
but it's fun.
It's one of those movies I would say really fun to revisit once every 10 years. But the ride isn't that fun because it's not that well put together. But it did show promise for David Fincher. And so like the second his next movie came out, I was there day one. And that'd be Fight Club.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, The Game starring Michael Douglas and Sean Penn.
That's fun.
A character actor who recently died.
James Redhorn, we miss you.
But holy crap, this is significant.
Big TV week, though.
This this I don't think gets enough credit.
Yeah, and I don't have a lot to say about it. Maybe you guys can help pick up some of the slack. Yeah, September 8th, 1997, Ally McBeal premieres on Fox. I think it would run for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, like about 6 years, but just a huge phenomenon for Fox. Yeah. I think there's kind of one of their biggest in between Simpsons and American Idol. You had Ally McBeal.
Yeah.
It was so hot, and I can't think of another show that did this. Other than Mystery Science Theater 3000, 2-hour show on Comedy Central, they ended up syndicating it by cutting it in half and showing an hour of it and giving it a new host. Ally McBeal was so popular, they made a half-an-hour show called Ally.
Oh, wow. That,
where they took out all of her courtroom and job sequences and focused on her love life, her personal life, and used new sequences to make it look more like a sitcom. Oh. It only lasted one season, but that's how popular it was.
So bizarre.
They cut down the show and aired it again.
Yeah.
They made like a best of. At the same time. They made a best of.
They made it at the same time. It was such a ballsy maneuver, but it was, it's got everything a show that's a phenomenon should have. It's controversial. Mm. People think it's anti-feminist. Mm. All the ladies I knew really liked it. I thought it was really funny. Yeah. And in a time of like mostly multi-camera sitcoms, Ally McBeal wasn't that. Yeah. And it had several episodes with like severe parental advisories. Yeah. The most nudity I'd seen on television. I don't want to be indelicate. But it was the first time I ever on television saw a woman nailed from behind. Can I say? Okay. Like, because they just, I remember watching it with my girlfriend. We were fucking shocked.
They're doing it Ally style.
They did it Ally style on the show. No nudity, but like, Jesus Christ, Fox. Wow. Like, holy shit.
Which
of course people hated and they only watched it more.
What most people remember, and what just comes to mind to when this show is mentioned, it's like, it's kind of cartoony. Like, they would do a lot of special effects, and the one everyone remembers is the Uga Chaka dancing baby.
The dancing baby, which I know.
I was going to put a clip in. I'm like, wait, it's just Uga Chaka.
It's just a dancing baby, but like, we talked about it before, where people think the baby's from the show. Hmm. This is technically Ally McBeal being one of the first shows to acknowledge internet memes. That is a 3D creation that was floating around the internet, little GIFs next to dancing bananas on GeoCities page, and they made it a character in Ally McBeal, a reoccurring character.
Yep. So I have to admit, I had never really cared for the show. Really, a lot of it's because of Calista Flockhart, because I find her such a vacuum of charisma. She just comes across as just really passive and sort of dull to me. And that's why I'm kind of glad, like, Lucy Liu, I feel like, was the breakout star from this show.
Yeah, and wait, someone else.
I remember Robert Downey Jr. came to the show for a while.
He did. The show hit a slump in its third season, and, like, that was Robert Downey Jr.'s comeback was being a season-long character arc on Ally McBeal. And I think that's where most of the world kind of discovered him, because he was not in mainstream movies at that point.
Well, I mean,
then.
He had done stuff in the 80s.
He had.
This brought him back.
He had, but he was doing like serious biopics and indie films.
And I wonder how long into this show was like, was Harrison Ford just like going through the channels with a glass of whiskey and like, ooh, that lady.
Yeah, but I think in some of the criticism, she's a comedic character, but a lawyer, but really bad at her job. Like, the worst lawyer. But it's a David E. Kelly joint. It's set in the Boston legal universe.
Yeah,
I think all those Boston public people make cameos.
The guy from Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, Peter McNichol.
Peter McNichol.
He was really good on it. Yeah, he's always good. Of course, this lives on forever as a Futurama episode, Single Female Lawyer.
But this is something I did catch up on. Just a wonderful little milestone, one of my favorite things.
So going from a live-action show that had animated elements to a live-action show that used to be animated.
Yes, and this is what I love. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation. The Turtles, Jesus Christ. The comic started in 1984. This is supposed to be their fourth film. But that had petered out too. Remember, like 84, but 87 is where the Ninja Turtles phenomenon kicks in.
Yeah. Mm.
That show ran from 87 to 1996.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's insane. Most cartoons never run that long, especially ones on networks. So that show ran for almost 10 years. And after that ends, a new one begins. To recapture the flame of Ninja Turtles, they have to reach out to the Ninja, the Power Rangers people.
Yeah, Saban.
So this is a live action production from the Power Rangers people, Saban. Mm-hmm. And Jesus Christ, if you look at it, that Henson technology in the first Ninja Turtles is pretty decent, but it's also lit well to hide its flaws. Mm-hmm. This is not, it looks real bad and jarring, but it's probably most notable for the incredibly important canon change that they made by introducing a fifth turtle.
She's tripping.
She's vivacious.
She's here. It just isn't probable. Splinter must have missed her.
There was a fifth turtle in the jar with us.
Cheng Yi thought I represented good luck and took me back to China with him. I was schooled in the internal arts and raised to replace him as a master shaman someday.
You ain't a ninja?
No, I am shinobi.
She's not a ninja. She's
a woman turtle.
She's got boobs.
She's got turtle boobs.
What?
For real, she's got a lady figure.
Fuck.
And I've seen lady turtles. Yeah. they don't look like that.
How would you even know?
You can see
they all look the same.
You can see the actor's eye holes and the mask. Mm. It's super uncomfortable. They eventually did if you've ever seen that gif of them meeting the Power Rangers, yeah. That's very real and very official. But this was canceled after one season after being very unpopular. I think the creators hate to acknowledge Vilas de Milo, the fifth female turtle. Mm. I think that's kind of unfair, but you know, she ends up being like a foreign stereotype more than a female stereotype. Mm. I'm from China. I don't understand your ways.
But just the whole, like, oh, yeah, there was a fifth turtle. No, just come up with something else.
But it's still bizarre to me.
Hey, it's our cousin we never mentioned that we talk about all the time, except not.
The cancellation of this show would lead to the longest drought in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles history. Five years.
How did you survive?
5 years.
Five whole years.
But I wasn't born into a lot of phenomena. We've done Laser Times about that forever. A lot of the characters I love were created. Spider-Man, Superman, Donald Duck. They're all before I was born. Ninja Turtles feels like mine. Mm. And it's never stopped, except for after this. It was the franchise was at such a low, it took until 2003 to reboot the series. And now we're at a point where Ninja Turtles will never go away.
Yeah.
They'll exist in some form.
Well, the movie series will.
Yes. They'll
do that well.
Yeah, but it'll come back. It'll be back again.
They'll do it again.
Which is a shame, because it's actually not that bad.
I have not. I cannot watch Out of the Shadow. It just looks too scary to me. But also, that Saturday morning, a bunch of other news shit airs.
So this is not as monumental as the 1987's Saturday morning debuts, because 1997...
There's no Betty White anywhere.
Yes. ALF isn't doing a primetime special to hype these. But also, like, 1997, we are in the dying days of Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Within, like, 5 to 10 years, no one has Saturday morning cartoons. But so the Saturday morning debuts on September 13th, 1997... were Pepper Ann, The New Batman Adventures.
Now that's
The New Batman and Superman Adventures.
I want to talk about that just briefly, because that's...
What's the difference?
The difference is I think they add Tim Drake as Robin, and they kind of renew the focus on a lot of Batman side characters. You get a lot of Batgirl and Nightwing. You can finally have a Nightwing. But it is a continuation of the just amazing Batman the Animated Series that began in 1992. What sucks, though, and I've said this a couple times on our shows, I love the Batman the Animated Series. I lived in a small town. We didn't have a WB. They basically took this show, renamed it, revamped it, and put it in a place I couldn't find it. I think now they shoehorned it in. If you buy DVDs, it's in the Batman the Animated Series DVDs. It's the same voices for the most part, the same design, but just a little cheaper because it's in the WB.
But what's up with Superman that he can't handle his own show? He has to be in the New Batman and Superman Adventures?
Didn't he
I think
have
they,
one right
they were a
time?
Block that aired together.
Oh, okay. So I just took that list off of Wikipedia.
Because they're essentially just new episodes of Batman, the animated series, but Superman kind of upped its look a little bit. So this is to gel them together into something that looks like part of the same universe and kind of the start of the DC animated universe, which has done very well for itself.
And something that's a little too little too late for me was the Weird Al show.
Sucks, doesn't it?
Which is like,
this is a natural, though. I mean, he's as a successor to Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh, yeah.
This makes all the sense in the
world. But he should have started this right when Pee-wee's Playhouse ended. Like, 92, 93, I would have been primed for this. Like, Alapalooza. Yeah. Is that what it was called?
I forget.
And those were on, like, MTV or VH1. And I love those, but they were only, like, once a year.
Yeah,
maybe.
Interstitial. They were never made available anywhere. So you couldn't, if you missed them, you can never see them again.
Yeah.
This you can finally buy. You can buy the Weird Al show.
Yeah, but so at this point, I'm 16, and I'm like, I'm actually discovering
girls.
Like that, yes. But also actual music.
Yeah.
I mean, not to.
No, my first CD is Off the Deep End by Weird Al.
So many, me and my friends, like our first CDs were Weird Al. But then, like 4 or 5 years later, we're like, we should get music that actually girls would want to listen to too.
I love Weird Al.
Yeah
Diana loves Weird Al.
There's a lot of Weird Al girls.
But it's also like, if all I had was Weird Al, like, that's kind of like a turn and runaway situation.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, do you like music that isn't parody jokes?
It's kind of hard to make out to Fat.
I got more chins than Chinatown.
I never watched this.
So I never
I was
watched
too
it,
old for it.
And I wanted to gather a clip because it's something I think is fun. You see it in GIFs all the time, and you think it's fake. A lot of this is visual. You might have to cut the sound down a little bit, but I want to see Diana's reaction to it, because this is the moment most of you are somewhat familiar with from the Weird Al show.
I feel worse than I did the time someone stuck a crazed weasel in my pants.
Hey, you letting a little robbery get you down? Don't be a crybaby. Get creative. How about a wrestling match? What do you say?
Come on. You want to wrestle?
Yeah.
You want to wrestle, Mr. Man?
Yeah.
You don't even know what you're in for. You are the world to hurt, my friend.
Really?
That's right. Come on, bring it on. Yeah, that's right. You are going to get it now. You, my friend, have finally met your match. All right, Harvey. Go get him. Come on.
He just takes Harvey a hamster and puts him on a gym mat, and then Randy Savage like elbows.
He literally runs in and elbows the hamster to death. I've seen this gif so many times. I just thought it was out of context, but it totally isn't.
Yeah, that's such magical stuff. Before that even happens, I never knew that Weird Al and Macho Man Randy Savage were in the same room.
Yeah, in his full NWO outfit.
Yeah. Throwing down and screaming.
But this is this decade's Betty White Alf gummy bears.
But oh, my God, that was the best.
The writers of the show say that was sort of part of the problem. Weird Al is... His music is totally appropriate for children, but I still like Weird Al because it's for adults, and the show was too. And it kind of went over kids' head. The censors didn't like it that much. The network didn't like it that much, and it got canceled after one season.
Yeah.
But it exists on DVD somewhere. We'll try and find it for you.
This is the perfect kind of thing. Like, if Comedy Central had this now, if Adult Swim had this now, it would be a big hit.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Last and also least, September 14th, 1997, CBS airs the debut of Michael Hayes, which was David Caruso's return to TV after he left NYPD Blue in 1994. This show only lasted one season, but luckily within 5 years, he would move to Miami and get some sunglasses and take them off all the time.
Yeah!
I can't even do the Who line.
Yep. And that's why babies should do impressions of David Caruso's career. It's my turn.
That's like that was a couple of weeks ago.
Only a couple of weeks ago.
And David Cruz is already like, hey, that joke's outdated, man.
Yeah,
I got Michael Hayes. It'll be on forever.
Joe sucks.
But not a lot of games in 1997, at least not at this point. But we're gonna head out of 1997 and meet you back in 2007 from the September 8th through the 15th. I keep getting that wrong. I gotta write it down. But we're gonna go out with the Fatboy Slim remix of Brimful of Asha.
Yeah.
We will be right back in the year 2007.
There's dancing behind movie scenes, behind the movie scene. Sadi Rani, she's the one that keeps the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life. Brimful of Asha on the 45. Well, it's a brimful of Asha on the 45.
Mr. Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for September 8th through 14th, there's plenty of stuff we can talk about, even though there's not a lot of movies. Actually, I don't think there's any movies. But 75 years ago this week, September 14th, 1942, John Ford's Battle of Midway short came out, which, if you've done like I told you to and Watch 5 came back on Netflix, you know all about. He was live there on the ground shooting color film during an attack by the Japanese on Midway. The short is on YouTube. It's not that long. It's really, really visceral in a way that you don't tend to see color in World War II. So I totally recommend it. Then skipping ahead to 40 years ago this week, 1977, we have a couple interesting deaths. Stephen Biko passed away. He was 30. Well, passed away is being nice. He was murdered by the pro-apartheid government forces. I could recommend Cry Freedom, which is a movie about Stephen Biko, but I think we have it coming up in 1987. So I'll move along to September 10th, 77. 40 years ago this week, Hamida Djandoubi is the last person executed in Western Europe by guillotine. 40 years ago, when I was alive, in at this point, 77, they executed someone with a guillotine still, but that was the last one, so yay. Maybe we should bring it back. Just saying. And finally, a couple days before that, in 77, Zero Mostel passed away. He was 62. So, as always, I have to recommend The Original Producers from 1968 because he is amazing in it. I think it might be Gene Wilder's best performance, too. The two together are incredible. I don't care for the musical, sorry, but The Original Producers, one of my probably top 10 favorite films of all time. I just love it. It's kind of my litmus test, like when I meet new people or boyfriends. If they didn't like The Producers, they were out the door. So, obviously, Michael does, so I married him. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Coming in with Big Girls Don't Cry, But Adult Men Do, to Fergie's number one hit, 2007, September 8th to the 14th. That's music. We're into music of 2007. New releases, Proof of Youth by the Go Team. I don't know why I did not get that album. I really love the Go Team. Manta Ray by Susie Sues, their first solo album.
I didn't realize she hadn't done a solo album until 2007. Huh. It was always Susie Sue and the Banshees.
Yeah, and Strawberry Jam by the Animal Collective, All the Lost Souls by James Blunt, Time Stand Still by the Hooters, including the cover of Boys of Summer. Is that the punk cover? R. Ill Wills by Shout Out Loud, Just Who I Am, Poets and Pirates by Kenny Chesney, and it's a big week for hip-hop because Curtis by 50 Cent and Graduation by Kanye West are all out this week.
Yeah, those came out in the same day.
Getting their ass kicked by Fergie?
Yep.
Life is unfair. But moving into 2007 news, this is
kind of keeping with the music bend.
The sweet tease.
Yes.
And how fucking dare anyone out there make fun of Britney after all she's been through? She lost her aunt. She went through a divorce. She had two fucking kids. Her husband turned out to be a user, a cheater, and now she's going through a custody battle. All you people care about is readers and making money off of her. She's a human! What you don't realize is that Britney's making you all this money, and all you do is write a bunch of crap about her. She hasn't performed on stage in years. Her song is called Give Me More for a reason, because all you people want is more, 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 more! Leave her alone! You're lucky she even performed for you bastards! Leave Britney alone!
I cannot believe how watchable that still is after 10 years. The Leave Britney Alone video.
Yes.
Chris Crocker?
Yeah,
made his way into a Meet the Spartans movie, I believe.
Wow.
But this is, come on, one of the first internet phenomenons. Yeah. The Leave Britney Alone video. This is not the original we're watching.
Right. No, but
still 2 million views.
We're talking a lot of the stuff we talk about. Like, it was uploaded to YouTube in 2007, but took probably a couple months. You know, things like Dramatic Chipmunk and stuff like that. But Leave Britney Alone, that was instantly popular because we'll be talking about it a little bit later. There was an instigating event that
happens
Crocker cry.
Wow,
but,
and this, I don't know why I've meant to track this down. September 13th would have been the day O.J. Simpson's If I Did It released.
But
I think it never
officially released.
I thought what happened
Copies were sent out and made. They made it.
I think it was released in a different form because, like, Ron Goldman's father sued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the book was released, but not under the name If I Did It. It was something similar, but now it's like, well, if you're going to fucking write about your confession, you're not going to make money off of it.
Yeah, it's pretty... I mean, there are laws in America, at least, that, like, if you go to jail for something, you can't profit off that crime. You wouldn't be able to write a book about that crime.
What was canceled was there's supposed to be a TV special, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Which they did cancel.
But this is O.J. Simpson's... But
there's a good Mad TV skit about it.
What is it called? Pseudo-memoir, where he writes about if I were to have done this crime I was acquitted of, this is how I would have done it.
If I killed two people, let's call them Bacol Brown Smith... and Bon Goldman.
That's bizarre,
in any context.
Because he was acquitted, it's the Son of Sam laws about profiting off of stuff don't apply. But he lost the civil suit.
Yeah, so there's still something in place.
He owes them money that he wasn't paying them. So that's why they said, like, no, he owes us money, so any profits from this should go to us, because this is gross.
And I don't remember that the controversy bubbled up by the time the books were printed and shipped out, that somebody got cold feet and didn't release it. So now you can just find it for free everywhere.
Fucking gross.
It is a little... I can't think of anything like that other than watching that HBO special, The Iceman Cometh, about the guy Michael Shannon played who killed all those people. And it's a cold thing to hear a first person perspective of killing somebody.
Yeah,
and
let's play devil's advocate for a second.
Sure.
So he didn't do it. Well, then why would you sit down and work for hours and hours imagining the details of if you had
at least
so
you
gross.
Put that kind of effort into an alibi, OJ. But Jesus Christ, yeah, that sort of came out and eventually saw the light of day. Man, that's depressing. Just now released from prison again. So OJ is amongst us. Maybe it can be a TV show now. I'm thinking a straight to Crackle series.
We did have that other TV show.
Which
Juiced.
One? Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But moving into movies of 2007, this is a weird week for movies because it's all over the place.
Yeah. Like, the number one movie at the box office is The Brave One with Jodie Foster, which I could not find a good clip of.
Yeah, well, I've seen it. For some reason, I was pitching a DVD column at our game website, so I watched this twice.
Wow.
But it's Jodie Foster's Death Wish.
Yeah.
Her husband gets killed by some criminals, and she goes on a vigilante tear.
Yep.
Mowing through them
Man,
with a
I
gun.
I kind of want to see this.
It's not exceptional, but I do love Jodie Foster a great deal. Diana, I cannot believe you referenced this at the top. This is the last one I would have expected from you.
Oh, yeah.
I've been waiting for you for a long time. She will bear the mark of the dragon on her shoulder. Her name is Sarah. And your second chance to protect the Aegyo. And remember...
Jesus Christ. D-Wars, Dragon Wars.
Dragon Wars. This was the highest grossing film in Korea
time. But it stars Robert Forster.
It is a Korean-made film.
And Craig Robinson.
Craig Robinson and Robert Forster are our leads.
Yeah.
And it's about a sacred thing that will protect the sacred dragons, and there's a lot of weird flashbacks, and then... a lot of info dumping from Robert Forster about him trying to say Korean names. And it just, oh man, it is so boring until the end.
Really?
And then the end.
You've seen this.
I watched this on a Bad Movie Sunday.
D-Wars.
The end pays off because I finally get what I showed up for, which is helicopter versus dragon urban environment fight. Yeah. That's all
Craig Robinson screaming.
Yeah.
And this is the first widely released Korean production in about three decades.
Wow.
I can't go on off on it that long because I didn't do enough research. But this is Korean cinema in this period was like really making a name for itself. I think typified by Old Boy, one of the greatest movies of the early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. Old Boy, The Host earlier.
The
than
Host,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Korean film was really. I thought they were going to make like a legitimate push for like being like the same way Chow Yun-Fat movies were being brought over and given simultaneous releases. And I think it petered out with D-War. They spent too much of that goodwill.
No, I think they're still going.
Yeah, they are, but like this was like a mainstream American. It looked like an American movie.
Yeah, this looks very expensive. There's a lot of, I mean, honestly, pretty good special effects.
But man,
is it boring until the end?
Everything seems like counter-programming to something else. Billy Bob Thornton and Sean William Scott and Mr. Woodcock, a movie I won't dignify with a description.
Sadly, out of everything this week, this is the thing I was probably most likely to watch. I just didn't. It just takes every like mid-2000s like R-rated borderline comedy cliche like... Is the cover of the DVD white with red lettering? Is one of the main characters leaning on the
Better
other main character?
Better not be Drillbit Taylor.
Yeah.
But this is one that has kind of stood the test of time / I know was in everybody's DVD collection because it was cheap very early on.
You want to go for a drink?
It's Christmas. Everything's closed.
Sometimes if things are closed, you just open them up.
This girl ended up in the hands of the Vorifa Sokonyi. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, straight off of a history of violence, Viggo Mortensen and David Cronenberg reteam for Eastern Promises.
Ooh,
a
damn
cool
good
movie.
Film.
I wish I've watched more, especially because
that name is not good.
The ending?
The name. It's just like, it evokes nothing.
Yeah, I think if you would have said, like, full-on naked Viggo Mortensen bathroom knife fight scene for 10 minutes.
The movie.
That should be the title.
Yeah, yes.
And then that would have covered all your bases, because you see more dicks than guns in Eastern Promises, technically. Actually, I think there are no guns in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about, like, shitty knife fights. But yeah, the Russian mafia, child prostitution ring, undercover cops. I don't want to ruin the whole story, but Eastern Promises is good film, right? I haven't seen it in a while.
A really good film. But yeah, I mean, that fight scene is like mini legendary.
Yeah.
It is a brutal fight scene.
It's a brutal fight, and he's naked the whole time.
And is naked.
Yeah, and you know this took days of being naked.
Days of being naked and getting thrown against, like, and they're like on tile.
Yeah.
And it's like, ah, fuck.
I've never seen this film, D.
Mm-hmm. What the right thing to do is...
You ever see that soldier in here?
Yeah, they were here.
You do not question the witnesses.
Figure somebody should.
Why don't you just tell me what happened?
It's complicated.
Find out why they lied.
It must be frustrating being surrounded by incompetent fools.
I'm not the only one who made a deal.
Whoa! Ooh. Charlize Theron really dressing down. I could barely recognize her there.
Yes, this is In the Valley of Elah.
And you probably saw it, I'm guessing, because it was nominated for an Oscar.
No.
Oh, I thought it was.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, it's a Paul Haggis joint, but it kind of...
Crash in Scientology fame?
Yeah, but it kind of fell into the mid-2000s. We got a lot of movies about Afghanistan and Iraq that no one wanted to see.
Mm.
Except the documentaries have all been real good.
Yeah.
You know, we had, like, Taxi to the Dark Side and stuff. But, yeah, and this is... It seems like it's not really about Afghanistan and Iraq. It's about Tommy Lee Jones's son, who was a soldier, who came back and then disappeared, and then it's a murder mystery. Mm. But nobody cared. So, I mean, all the reviews are like, yeah, it's pretty good.
And, topping off this baffling buffet of films for the week of September 8th through the 14th.
As blissful as you two are in the throes of young love, I got a date with Uncle Sam.
This is a lot tougher to listen to now.
60s the movie.
Yeah.
Across the Universe, Julie Taymor directed film. I just rewatched Cloud Atlas. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where's Jim Sturgis? What the hell else has he been in? Why is he not more famous? And I forgot, it's from this movie. He's like the star of Across the Universe.
Yeah.
The Beatles music, still too expensive to license. You have to re-record it and make the whole movie.
Well, I mean,
it's
a musical, so it makes sense that other people are singing stuff.
Yeah.
I've not really watched a whole lot of this, but my girlfriend, she says she's watched it like over 100 times.
Really?
Yeah. And it's always one of those things, like, she put it on every once in a while, and I'll be like, okay, I'll watch it this time, and fall asleep within like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm like...
It's a very disjointed film, right?
She just likes musicals, so I think that's why she is a big fan of it.
I mean, I feel like in some ways I felt like, oh shit, they made this movie for me, because I really like Julie Taymor. Mm-hmm. Titus is a super underrated movie. She's got a great visual style, and there's a couple...
Helped get the best Broadway play off the ground, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yep. Well, here's her team, and Bono's in this, and that's... I wonder if that's how they met or what.
Mm.
That's how that started.
Ah.
My God. I mean, it's a movie musical told with all Beatles songs, and it's just... There's a lot of just dumb 60s cliches that I found really boring. It was not as visually interesting as I expected.
Yeah.
There are a couple great sequences in it, though. I will give you that one.
What does Eddie Izzard do?
Being for the benefit of Mr. Kite.
Mm.
I texted my lady friend Marty, like, what's a good scene from this? And it's all, like, none of it's good for audio, because
it's
just people singing.
It's very visual.
And I'll get a suit.
But she pointed out one scene where there's spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's I Want to Hold Your Hand,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it's this... cheerleader singing it from the bleachers watching the star quarterback and his... cheerleader girlfriend, but then at the end of the song it turns out she's singing it about the girl.
Oh,
about the cheerleader. Which is,
how subversive.
Yeah.
It was the 60s.
Yeah. No, I like there's a cool Vietnam sequence too. I Want You, She's So Heavy, where like the soldiers are like carrying a Statue of Liberty through the jungle.
Mm.
It's like, okay. Yeah. This is what I was expecting. I want, when it's Julie Taymor, I want her to go big and crazy, and a lot of it's not big and crazy enough for me.
And it is a bit too cheesy. Like, the main character's name is Jude.
Of course.
Wonder if anybody's going to say hello to him.
Yeah.
That could happen. But geez, it's a busy week for movies, but...
TV not so much, because we've...
we're old men?
Well, also, yeah, that, but also, by 2007, the fall season has been pushed back, as I alluded to earlier, to... popular shows that I couldn't tell you a single thing about if you said their names debuted on the same day, and very different shows, I presume, because I don't know what either of them are about. Mm-hmm. On September 8th, 2007... iCarly debuts on, I think, Nickelodeon or Disney or something.
Yes, Nickelodeon.
And Torchwood, which debuted on HBO or Showtime or something.
Or
TBS or TNT.
iCarly I never saw.
BBC America?
But it's a great, great GBA game.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Torchwood, is that the Doctor Who one?
Right.
So okay. Somebody blew my mind with that. Like, it's an anagram for Doctor Who.
Is it?
Yeah. Torchwood.
Now I'll finally remember, because I thought Torchwood, oh, that's like an HBO show that's like a Western or something.
Yeah, or that's a free-to-play first-person shooter. Yeah. I totally forgot.
I thought it was like a WB-UPN, like teenage drama, like One Tree Hill or something.
Torchwood, but lasted
we're
5 years.
We're terrible and we're old.
There's a couple other things. September 13th was It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the debut of Green Man.
Green Man.
I love this episode.
And I just wanted to... We haven't even talked about Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but I wanted to give it a small shout-out. Yeah. Because
we haven't talked about it since, like, I think last year we brought up that was the first time that Danny DeVito was on the show,
which
was when it started to get its legs, but now it's just going full crazy.
It's great. It's one of those things I neglect because I don't watch it on television. It dumps onto Netflix, and they just autoplay in one sitting, and I forget about the show for a year. But Green Man is one of the first big Always Sunny memes that I can remember it spawning. You go to a Comic-Con, you go to a Halloween party,
that's...
you have a really good chance of finding a Green Man.
Oh, yeah. That kind of bothered me. Like this year and like the year after, like, oh, good Green Man costume. I see you bought literally one thing.
Yes. Mm. Like, it's a see-through spandex neon green, so mattable, so chroma-keyable.
Is this one where they're tailgating?
They're tailgating. Yeah. I think that's what Charlie wears to the Philadelphia Eagles games. But I just wanted to point... Always Sunny in Philadelphia has been on long enough. It's been seen by so many people. It has so many episodes. It's been syndicated. It is approaching meme levels that only The Simpsons can compare to. I have seen people answer and respond to threads with Always Sunny memes, Charlie pointing at a conspiracy wall, Danny DeVito being birthed out of a couch. Like, I think it's getting there. It's getting to Simpsons level of widespread knowledge, and I think that's great. It's one of the most infinitely, like, I don't care what episode this is. I'll watch it if it's on TV.
Yeah.
And how did this go from like TVMA on FX to like airing before America's Funniest Home Videos on WGN? I don't know.
I forgot the conceit of that episode is that they're tailgating, but they're also trying out for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes,
a la
Invincible.
Yeah. Yep.
Invincible.
Go Eagles.
Well, speaking of competition, on September 14th, 2007, the final episode of Ty Murray's Celebrity Bull Riding Challenge.
Is this real?
Sorry, I wasn't there to get the premiere of it, but we got the finale, and I looked it up. I didn't find a winner, so I guess it was like, they're all winners. It's like, if a reality show doesn't...
The winner is friendship.
Yeah. Nobody watched it, and nobody remembers the winner. Was it a reality
Ty
show
Murray?
At all? Ty Murray is a bull rider. He's also the husband of Jewel. And she was one of the competitors on this.
Oh, that's no fair. She's a ringer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, like, the only notable name in this list. Everyone else is, like, B-list at best.
Stephen
Also on the cast was Leif Garrett, Stephen Baldwin, Francesco Quinn. I don't know who that is.
I don't know.
And from Survivor, Johnny Fairplay, John Dalton.
Vanilla Ice at some point.
Oh, sorry. I forget.
Yo, Nilla.
But the big thing this week, September 9th, is the MTV Video Music Awards. Mm-hmm. Umbrella by Rihanna wins big, but this would trigger Chris Cocker. Britney Spears had a performance. Is this the one with the snake?
No.
No. Okay. No. No. It's. I did watch it, and that's... It's bad for sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's her looking very unrehearsed and lip syncing very, very poorly and kind of forgetting her dance moves, why a ton of great shit happens around her.
She's really low energy.
Yeah. And I don't think she's on drugs. Mm-hmm. I think she just doesn't care.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that inspired that video that we played earlier, the Leave Britney Alone video.
Everyone came down on, like, what the fuck was that?
And I'm watching this and, like,
you half assed it, Britney.
Yeah, but I'm watching this like, this isn't a big deal. How did this kick off like this? The paparazzi craze of Britney Spears that culminated in that great South Park episode where they just follow her till she shoots herself in the head.
I mean, was this before or after like the bald head and the
after.
Umbrella?
Is it after?
We're after all.
Oh,
that.
I thought it was before that.
So this is like a culmination. Like,
this is it.
The years between albums, it was like people were hounding her, and it's like, why? She's not doing anything, and now she's doing something, and everyone's like, this sucks. So I can imagine why, like, a big fan would be just angry
that
everyone's shitting on her.
Britney Spears fan by any stretch of the imagination, but it was an odd, I think, telling voyeuristic period for America, mm-hmm. where we built up this celebrity, and now all we want to do is enjoy her failure as much as we want. And again, that's what that South Park episode's about. Let's watch her shave her head. Let's harass her at a gas station. Let's bombard her with odd questions while she holds two children in the middle of a high-profile divorce, which is a private thing between two people. All this kind of stuff. Well, like,
they did have a reality show together.
That girl, that woman is going to be, I guess right now, is probably so fucking strong and will be a fucking entertainer for the rest of her life. Yeah. She lived through one of the worst harassment campaigns, I think. Yep. We're all responsible for it, I think.
Britney Spears is probably the most balanced person in Las Vegas.
Probably.
Right now. Like, she's got a daily show that people love, and she has her kids, and she takes care of them, and is doing a great job. So it's like... You know, she turned out, you know, she took a lot of lumps in the process, but hey, now she's doing her.
Yeah, I just don't remember
flame
that.
Flame-tempered steel.
I remember growing up in the shadow of, like, making fun of child celebrities going bad, mm-hmm. but this was like, no, it's the internet age. It's our chance to watch this live. We don't have to wait for Dana Plato to die or hear that she got arrested. We can follow around with cameras mm-hmm. and make sure we're there when it happens. Mm-hmm. And it was a really ugly period. Fuck you, TMZ.
And moving on to...
But speaking of ugliness, meanwhile, the rest of the show, everyone's paying attention to Britney.
Oh, yes!
And
yes,
no one notices that during the show, while Alicia Keys is performing, Kid Rock and Tommy Lee get in a fist fight.
Yeah, Kid Rock and Tommy Lee get in the shittiest, stupidest fist fight for two men you know who can't fight for shit. Dave and I could beat up both of them very easily. Diana could. They get.
I would have rather if they just took out their wieners and hit each other with those.
Yeah.
I kept trying to find video of it because the description made it sound like Kid Rock jumped off the stage, but Alicia Keys was performing. And here's how old I am. Her comeback performance.
Oh, wow.
Alicia Keys went away.
Nice. I didn't know that.
I didn't remember that. She still seems like a new artist to me. But yeah, Tommy Lee and Kid Rock get in a fight. And that overshadows almost anything or anybody who won because I looked at it. They had a very interesting venue where they devoted four stages to different acts who then invited people to collaborate with them. Ooh. It was very neat. But now we don't remember that because leave Britney alone in a fight between two
Leave her alone.
Leave her alone. We finally got some games.
Yeah, some notable releases this week. No, not big blockbusters, but a couple of
some
games that you might
really
remember. So I'm just going to go in date order. Mm-hmm. September 9th, 2007, fulfilling a prophecy from a week or two ago, Balls of Fury comes out on the DS, which is like, you know what, I guess that can be a game. It's about ping pong.
Someday I want to do a lowest grossing movie to get a fucking console game.
I did a feature photo like that for Games Radar.
Did you?
Once, which was like Catwoman, Waterworld, the biggest flops that ever became video games.
Oh, damn. Probably Ballistic X versus Sever.
That's in there. There were two X versus Sever games, and they're both not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
September 10th, 2007, DK Jungle Climber and Drawn to Life come to the Nintendo DS.
Drawn to Life, the wonderful Comedy Central animated show, gets its own Nintendo game.
Drawn to Life was a pretty neat franchise
for
a
really
while.
Cool.
Where it's just
it's
like
a good idea.
Yeah, what was it? You just draw things and no,
you draw things and they literally come to life. You create a town and townspeople.
I'm thinking of Scribblenauts where you just say a thing and it happens.
Yeah, but it's the lead up to something like Scribblenauts. And I remember, if I'm not mistaken, the coolest thing it did, it's on a Nintendo DS, so when you shut it, everybody in town goes, aww. And when you open it up, it goes, yay! We're happy to see you again. I think that's Drawn to Life. I might have reviewed this. I totally forget.
Wow. And DK Jungle Climber, I think that's like, it's the weird, like, kind of top-down sort of DK game where he's like, oh no, I'm thinking of King of Swing. I think it's a kind of a similar thing where it's just him climbing.
Why this must have passed me by. I'm a big Donkey Kong fan. I love that dumb asshole.
September 11th, 2007, to help the world heal from the 6th anniversary of 9/11, we have Dirt for PS3. I don't know. And NHL 08 for PS2, PS3, Xbox 360, and PC.
I think that's significant because Dirt is a great game. A great series. Had a new entry this year. It's the 10th anniversary of Dirt.
Yeah.
One of our more modern sports franchises, but it's also very arcadey and enjoyable if you're not.
Yeah, I prefer that to the other Codemasters racers. There's Grid, which can sometimes be. Sometimes it's fun, but sometimes they make it a little bit too
I'm probably putting the two together.
Dirt is the rally racing game.
Codemasters made the Colin McRae games.
And they had to stop calling it Colin McRae.
He died while racing. So it's like, maybe we don't call the games then.
Yeah, this is the 10th anniversary of just Dirt.
Yeah.
I think. before that, it was Colin McRae's dirt
Yeah. I think so, but they thought it'd be in poor taste to use the man's name, even though I guarantee you're they're going to call Madden long after that dude is dead.
He doesn't do anything for the game anymore.
I know. I know. It's so weird. He's so lucky.
The more notable releases of this week, September 12th, 2007, Heavenly Sword for the PlayStation 3. I think this is from the developers of the Senua
game. Yeah, it's Ninja Theory.
Ninja Theory, yeah. They've just been like... For a decade now, they've been making like good to great games. They've rarely stumbled.
Yeah, I wish.
Heavenly Sword, I think a lot of people had the expectation like this is going to be the next God of War, and it's not. It's its own game, and it's fun, and it's like one of the first like great visual showcases for the PlayStation 3. But it's not gonna. It's not on the level of God of War, which they take 5 years each, but they're always epic.
I wish we could show Diana some clips of Heavenly Sword because, in a post Lord of the Rings world, Ninja Theory was. I've always been very critical of story in games, and a lot of that is because it's clunkily shot and acted. This was a video game like, we're going to focus on mocap. So Andy Serkis, it's just Andy Serkis mocapping the bad guy, Bohan. And for me, it was like, this is the most compelling bad guy I've ever seen in any video game.
Wow.
I believe these characters' emotions. I can read expressions on their face. It's very cinematic. Noriko is a great character.
Yeah.
It's odd that they never followed up on this, and that they made a CG movie that I
really?
Think went straight to video. Wow. Yeah, I thought maybe because I thought some of the sequences looked better than than straight to video CG films at
that
time.
It's the Ninja Theory curse. They're gonna make like interesting games that you'll never forget, but they'll never make a sequel to them.
But that's still
everything they did. That Enslaved, DMC, and this new game, Senua's Sacrifice.
Senua's Sacrifice.
I don't think any of them are going to ever be sequelized, but they all are great little
standalone
games.
They're all really
great,
and I don't know, it's you can see the it's like I love being able to see innovation while it happens and games are a good medium for that obviously, and Ninja Theory is a good developer to follow for that.
Yeah.
Never got better than DMC for me. But we did stream their latest game on youtube.com/lasertime if you're curious to check that
out. Really really good looking game. And September 13th, 2007, Pixel Junk Racers comes out on the PS3. Finally, PlayStation has their Mario Kart, albeit not nearly as memorable or good. But the more notable release this week is Skate for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. This is EA filling a void that Activision left. I don't remember if we even talked about a Tony Hawk game.
I don't know that they took a break at this point.
I think they're like a year or two away from like giving up the ghost for a while. Mm-hmm. And now that
the Tony Hawk series was white hot, and now it's been diminishing returns. And EA takes a hold of, well, we're going to make our own skateboarding game. And not unlike what they did with Fight Night, which you talked about last year, where they made boxers' arms analogs for the analog sticks. You move up, down. I thought it was too fucking hard. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that for Skate, because you're like actually using the analog sticks for the most part to do things with your feet. The same thing to mimic what you do on a real skateboard, rather than Tony Hawk, which is to hold X. hold
so
X to move.
Later this year, we'll be talking about the last Tony Hawk game for nearly a decade. I think Project 8 was a good like sort of comeback for Tony Hawk, which was happened in 2006, but for a while it was Underground 2, American Wasteland. Those games are they are the definition of retread.
Project 8 had a stupid gimmick, but it didn't overshadow or ruin the rest of the game.
Yeah, and it was also like the first real HD Tony Hawk, and then Proving Ground like didn't really change too much, or like, and then they went on an 8-year hiatus.
Skate only got to 3 entries; it wasn't ever quite annualized. And I don't think I know people love it, and I would love to see a new entry too. Because if you want just a laugh, just go look up Skate.
Oh, those glitches!
Skate fails, skate bloopers in the game. They're funnier than actual skate fails in real life. They're fantastic.
It's like seeing a guy biff on a skateboard, but then he falls through the environment.
Yes, it's fantastic. It's really good, and a lot of good Sonic stuff in there too.
Yeah.
But that's it for games. Guess what, people? Your comments are so awesome. You leave them on lasertimepodcast.com or 302010.net. We liked reading them on the show and we wanted to read more, so we made an extra show just for patrons, people who support us on patreon.com/lasertime. Not only do you get an exclusive weekly show, over like about 100 audio commentaries, live sync video commentaries, wrestling commentaries, a wrestling podcast, a bunch of other new stuff, exclusive stuff for you, just for the low cost of $5. Another show where we read stuff like this, because this is from last week. Slider64 shares their memory of the big video game release, which I don't even remember what it is at this point. I was 10 years old, running an errand for my grandparents by hand-delivering a letter to a house they rented out. The tenant invited me in for lemonade and called for her son. He yelled he was playing a new game, and she told me to pop into his room. I walked in to see him playing Final Fantasy VII. I was so confused because I'd played Final Fantasy III, but never heard of 4, 5, and 6 being a Nintendo of America kid. Anyways, I was blown away by the graphics, music, gameplay, and begged for a PlayStation and a Final Fantasy VII for Christmas. Got it, and still play it, and love FF7 to this day.
Yeah.
But that is our show. Of course, we have our birthday and death extravaganza quiz. But let's go out with some plugs.
Yes, Laser Time, the flagship show of this network. We're doing a lot of TV stuff to bring in the new fall season. We just did an episode about pilots that drastically changed when they became regular shows. We'll also be doing an episode about school.
The funniest thing you did, and Diana was there for it, was the TV censored version of famous really film great. Lines and movies.
Oh, we got to do a sequel to that.
Dude, that is, we got so many great stuff. Suggestions. Please don't stop. That was so fucking funny.
But you mentioned before, patreon.com/lasertime.
It really does help. We do need your support now more than ever. Yeah. Things, they are a-changing. Mm-hmm. But we do need your support to keep doing this kind of stuff for a living and keep us all being paid and eating. But
eating's
yes,
good.
We try and make it up to you any way we can. I love the 30-20-10, the bonus stuff. I love your anecdotes from these periods. But without further ado, I'm going to give it over to Diana, who's going to tell us who died in this period.
1987, bunch of deaths. Lorne Greene died. He was 72. TV star for a jillion billion years.
Why does he sound so familiar? I feel like I just watched something with him in it.
He didn't make Saturday Night Live, I know that.
It's not the same guy.
Different Lorne.
Yeah. No, he was...
Battlestar Galactica.
The original Battlestar Galactica, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mervyn LeRoy is a classic film director, was 86, and Peter Tosh, reggae legend, was only 42. Wow.
How did he die?
Cancer?
It's got to be something tragic at that age.
In 1997, we finally lost Burgess Meredith, who was 89.
Finally over, Rock.
His heart was a bum!
Yeah, no, I remember so clearly, I was flipping the channels and hit MSNBC something, and they're like, oh, Burgess Meredith, he's been in so many movies, so many TV shows, whatever. And then they used the word, ironically, in the worst way I've ever heard. They said, and ironically, in his last film, Grumpy Old Men, he played a dying old man.
Wasn't in that movie, was he?
Every old actor plays a dying person in their final roles.
He was 89. He died almost as much as Sean Bean in the end. I mean, always dying in movies.
I forget what caused
me to look, that's not ironic.
It was also into Burgess Meredith, but a guy who has been in something iconic almost every decade of his career.
And he was so good. He died in Rocky III. Spoiler.
Yeah. He's the Penguin.
They brought him
in
back
Batman.
In five. They brought him back in five in a dream sequence, which is great.
He's the Penguin in Batman. He's in one of the best Twilight Zone episodes ever.
Yeah.
He's in Mice and Men.
One of the few good things about Rocky V is Burgess Meredith's cameo.
Yeah. Also, we lost Anita Roddick. Roderick.
I need a Roddick. Diana, come on. I'm not taking that out.
She was 64. That's the creator of the Body Shop. She used to be in all their ads.
No shit.
Yep. And Jane Wyman, who was 90, the only other woman out there that we know of that had sex with Ronald Reagan.
Really? How do we know this for sure?
They were married. That's Ronald Reagan's first wife. And she was in a ton of great classic movies. And she made
probably
it to
90. Got down.
Good for her.
You know, I had two interviews with The Body Shop. Didn't quite get it. Anyway, it's time to go to the birthday quiz.
Oh, birthday is a
This is where Diana will tell us. We'll try and guess this male and female celebrity who had birthdays this week.
I apologize. This was such a packed show. I decided to only go for one birthday.
Oh, cool.
Ooh, double the points.
Yeah, so double points this week for born September 14th, 1947. So happy 70th birthday. He was born Nigel John Dermot Neal. He was a one-time finalist to play James Bond. His films include My Brilliant Career, Omen 3, Hunt for Red October, Memoirs of an Invisible Man, The Piano,
Chevy Chase, no.
Sirens, Event Horizon, In the Mouth of Madness,
Sam Neill,
yeah,
in your face. It's not fair. I have one of my best friends is named Sam Neill. Dumb knowledge of his film career. And we didn't even get to Jurassic Park.
Nope.
Yes.
I had to skip that one. It's too easy.
That concludes this edition of 30-20-10. Tune in next week and we'll be talking about September 15th to the 21st. Some of the best movies we've ever talked about. Be there, people. We will close out with the Leave Britney Alone remix. See you next week.